Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to the arcade. We are Canada's video game radio show here and exclusively on 92.9 Kick FM. It is Winnipeg's indie station. I am the voice you are hearing. Now that the obviousness has been put aside, I am Mike the Legend here with you for Friday, August the 20th of the year 2010. Yes, this year it doth continue rolling on. Time waits for no man. And a Rolling Stone gathers no moss, etc., etc.,
etc.
Various other generalities. But yes, I am Mike the Legend here with you again for a business as usual type of program, is it not?
Yes, it sure is. And I am Dennis, who is bringing back the phrase, what a maroon.
Are you now? You single-handedly are undertaking this venture.
Well, I've been kind of... It's been a back burner kind of project for a couple of years. You know, I've said it in odd instances here and there. No one gets the reference.
Unfortunately.
Which kind of makes it even funnier, considering how popular the source, to me, seems to be. But I'm obviously wrong.
Clearly you are then, and I'm sure there are some of our listeners who are getting the reference, and
I hope,
and understand where it comes from, but unfortunately there might be some others who haven't been exposed to it and don't fully appreciate it for all its lunacy, if you will.
Yes, it's Bugs Bunny. Just putting it out there. It was something he used to say. You know, whenever someone was doing something really silly, he would say, what a maroon. You know, obviously, a more, you know, well, a mispronounced version of saying what a moron, obviously, but they couldn't say that on television back then, or probably you shouldn't anyway. It just kind of seems a little rude. But what a maroon seems kind of funny to me, because you know what they mean, but they're saying it wrong on purpose. Which makes it even worse. Makes you even worse of a maroon. Maybe I'm just speaking out of my behind here, but I don't know.
You see,
I like the phrase, that's all.
It is a fun phrase, and you know what? It's fun to throw it out there and confound the people you might be with if they don't understand it.
Yes, but, oh well.
It's unfortunate.
It's not my problem.
It's Bugs Bunny. When did he fall by the wayside?
I don't know.
I thought Bugs Bunny was contemporary.
So did I.
Apparently not.
To contemporary on also now classic?
Borderline classic now. Well, I guess not borderline. A lot of those cartoons are 40, 45, if not 50 years old.
Yes, they are. If not more than that. So.
Perhaps they're more classic than contemporary now. Perhaps we've, you know, completely contradicted ourselves, yet come around to the other point of view.
That's all right. This is a learning process, this show. We discover a new thing every day.
We do our best to remove the stigma of maroon from ourselves.
Yes, and you as well.
You're welcome. I almost said thank you. But no, we're the ones being thanked, because we are espousing and spreading the knowledge.
Yes, so the next time you need to really lay into someone, call them a maroon.
Do it indeed. You know, just freely start using it when you're on the bus, when you're in the drive-thru, when you're at the cashier, when you're in an elevator with somebody else.
Or when you're in a really stupid lawsuit.
Ooh, that could work as well. Ah, yes. Now, we're going to go back now a couple weeks ago to revisit a blast from the past that we had. And this is something that I can't recall us ever doing.
That's true.
A couple weeks ago, not last week, but the week before, because last week was, in fact, our 4.5-year anniversary special, which we turned into an all Frank Zappa music special.
Yes.
Which turned out really well, I think.
I thought it turned out really well as well.
A jam-packed episode with nothing but some fantastic musical stylings of Frank Zappa as we continue to spread the gospel of of the man himself. And
yes.
Well, really, check out Frank Zappa. That's all we can say.
Yes.
We can only beat you over the head with it so much. But the week before that was where we had a blast from the past, which was Uniracers.
Yes, Uniracers. I think we mentioned something like along the lines of we don't know why it wasn't so popular. Like, it never sold that much, or...
And there was never a sequel, and in theory it should have been re-released or available for download on a, you know, virtual console, if you will.
Yes, we found out some very disturbing and also sad news.
It's almost
immediately after recording the program, because we kind of thought, huh, that is weird. Let's look this up. And we didn't have time to talk about it last week, but we have time to talk about it now.
And so we shall. As it turns out, there was, in fact, never a sequel released for Uniracers.
And there is actually a limit on how many copies of the original run of Uniracers were produced and sold.
This is true. We actually found an article interviewing the developers and, the men behind Uniracers, which, by the way, it was only known as Uniracers in North America.
Yes, it was Unirally everywhere else in the world.
Okay. I think Uniracers is a better name, but hey, such is the way of things. But, yes, in this interview conducted, and we'll have the link available on our website, thearcadeshow.com, and it was revealed through this interview that, well, they were limited to a run of 300,000 copies of this game.
Yes. And why was this?
Well, you see, there was a lawsuit against them and against the game for, being too similar, the character of the unicycles in the game Uniracers. Apparently, they appear to be too similar to a cartoon that was done by Pixar, which also depicted a unicycle.
Yes. And this is very, very bizarre, because...
And disappointing.
And really disappointing. I mean, the developer himself said it in a very blunt way. He said, how many other ways can you possibly depict a 3D unicycle? Like, honestly, what's the limitation on that? Like, how far can you take this kind of lawsuit?
Well, apparently Pixar did their best to find out. The deal was that Pixar did a cartoon back in 1987, which had a depiction, a computer-generated unicycle. Of course, nobody would really think anything of it, and that was back before Pixar was the behemoth of a company that they are now. And, you know, people wouldn't think anything of it, and certainly the developers of Uniracers would think nothing of it, because they were modeling these in-game unicycles off real-world unicycles.
Yes.
But
it doesn't even sound like they knew about the Pixar cartoon.
This is true. And, apparently Pixar found out about this game, took issue with it, and, because of the court case, Nintendo halted production of the game and limited the game to a run of 300,000 copies.
Yes.
There you go. Pixar is the reason.
Yes, so...
We don't have Uniracers 2.
Or that Uniracers was never more widely...
Available.
I mean, I kind of happened upon my copy a few years ago, and... I snapped it up at the first chance I got, because I remember always wanting that game, because they had, like, a brief run of commercials, and it looked like the coolest game ever, to be fair, at the time. We always like to talk about, you know, how Mike the Legend was on the Sega side of things, and how I was on the Nintendo side of things during the original console wars, I like to call it, and as many other people like to call it.
Indeed.
But Sega was always touting their blast processing, and Nintendo never really seemed to have any games that felt as fast as, like, Sonic the Hedgehog or anything like that. Uniracers changed that. It was like, wow, it's a super fast game on Super Nintendo. Wow, Super Nintendo can do it. Wow, cool. And then, like, I just remember it not being available anywhere for a while, and then it just wasn't sold anymore. Then I was really disappointed. Then a few years ago, I kind of picked it up at a used video game store for relatively cheap, just seeing it amongst a bunch of the games, and then I thought, oh, cool, Uniracers, I'll buy this. Then I played it a lot, and then I didn't think anything of it. I just thought it was just kind of like one of those things where I must have missed my chance buying it. No, it was actually kiboshed by Pixar, of all companies.
I know when I read it, and I know when you read it, because you sent me the link, that I was completely floored by it.
Yes.
You can maybe understand if there was, I guess, you know, it was co-developed between two companies and they had a falling out, something like that. No. Pixar said, your unicycle looks too much like our computer-generated unicycle. Apparently, Pixar thought that they had an absolute monopoly on computer-generated unicycles.
This is such a bizarre concept to me.
Just like, imagine what would happen if you tried to develop a computer-generated desk lamp back in the day.
You'd be
still paying for that.
I bet, just hearing this, if Pixar caught wind of, like, or heard that there was, like, a desk or something, and let's say a computer game like Myst or something back, you know, like when computer games first started to proliferate like that, with their graphics and everything, Myst was a good example of, like, good graphics, an early example of good graphics in a game anyways, and for some reason I remember there being, like, some kind of, like, at least a desk somewhere in it. So perhaps they, I don't know. What would have happened back then, even?
I really don't know what to say. And
how far can they take this, though? Well, I mean, they've animated all sorts of stuff in their movies.
They have. I guess it was just back in that time that, you know, computer-generated graphics were, I guess, starting to further proliferate to the point of, you know, more realistic tones, as we saw, you know, back in the mid-90s. And I guess Pixar felt slighted for some reason, I'm assuming. I don't know. I don't really know what the mentality was. But it's just bizarre that you would pick on this one unicycle, of all things, and that a judge would side with Pixar in the case. And the developers have some very, very, well, poignant quotes on that matter.
Yes, and we will link you to the article. It's a very interesting read. A very disappointing read.
Very disappointing read indeed, but it is that, that, you know, lawsuit that occurred, that litigation that has basically stymied any, you know, hope, any possibility of, you know, a sequel to the game, as well as any re-release of the game on a downloadable platform.
Yes, so,
and it's bizarre that here we are, like, you know, 15 years after the fact, still.
Yeah.
What the hell? I'd certainly be intrigued to see what would happen if somebody tried to do Uniracers 2 right now.
Make it an open source fan based not for profit game?
Entirely possible.
I could see it getting a cease and desist.
Probably, but
but if it was me running it, I'd say, I'm going to keep it up. What are you going to do? Actually shut me down? Take me to court. Go ahead and try and sue me. I got no money.
At this point, I really don't even think they'd be able to get away with that, with, you know, hey, that unicycle looks too much like a unicycle we did in 1987 as part of this, you know, CG animated short.
Hey, it also looks like this unicycle I bought. Hey, look at this. I modeled it after this one. Are you going to sue the makers of this, too? Are you going to sue those trees over there for growing apples that you've also animated in your movies?
Ooh.
How about that, huh? I don't know, like, this is just what keeps going through my mind. Like, how far are you going to take this? Going to sue someone for drawing a DVD on a piece of paper because they animated a DVD going into a DVD player once? Like, it's ridiculous.
Pixar, obviously, at the time, must have been a very, very different company. But, I mean, that's the dealio. That's the long and short of it. That's why we do not have Uniracers 2. Why a new generation cannot be introduced to what was an absolutely fantastic game. It was the, I guess, action sport trick-a-palooza type game before there ever was Tony Hawk.
Exactly. It was just super innovative, and I can't really say that enough. It was a really fun game.
Super innovative, super simplistic as well, but with enough intricacy to it that you can get into it and love it for a while and learn. Well, you know, if you lose enough times, then you don't love it, but I'm just saying. But yeah, Uniracers, if you are able to find a copy now, because now we know there was very limited quantities released. Do go out and check it out, pick it up, and, well, you might not see it again.
Yes, but,
so that's that. That is the update to a previous Blast from the Past, and, well, all right then. Now you know, and knowing is half the battle.
Yes, but now we should actually get into our real news.
Yes, can we even really call it the real news yet? I mean, it is just the ludicrous lead-off.
It's true. Let me bring you back up a little bit, you know, since we kind of brought you down there at the start. Kind of depressing.
It is kind of depressing, but you know what? What's going to put a smile on your face? absolutely insanely bad ideas.
Yes.
Which are hilarious.
And abundant in the spy game genre, it seems, of, well, the two Call of Duty teams seem to have this kind of friendly competition going on.
It's true, with not just the in-game product and the various features in the game, but also that rivalry, that one-upsmanship, extends to the collector's edition of games. Now, a couple of years ago, Call of Duty, in its super-duper collector's edition, got released with some night vision goggles, excuse me.
Yes, for Modern Warfare 2, that is. That was the Infinity Ward team, but Treyarch, the other team responsible for developing the Black Ops games...
Indeed, the Black Ops coming out this fall.
They had to kind of one-up that somehow.
Indeed, as if, you know, a real working pair of night vision goggles wasn't creepy enough and just generally a bad idea to put in the hands of people who shouldn't have them. Even better... Let's take it to the next level. Instead of night vision goggles, this year with the, I guess, super duper collector's edition of Call of Duty Black Ops, you, as a customer, as a consumer, as a purchaser of this product, will be able to receive an RC surveillance car.
That's right. Your very own.
You're a real working RC surveillance car. What's that? It's exactly as it sounds. It's an RC car with a spy camera on it. And it works.
And it works from up to 200 feet away. 200 feet.
It's able to transmit not just video, not just color video, but audio as well. Now, granted, it's not going to be 5.1 Dolby, but even still, good God.
But, yeah. I don't really have anything else to say about this.
Now, we didn't really hear of any, I guess, lawsuits stemming from the night vision goggles. We didn't hear of anybody being, I guess, convicted on stalking charges, etc., etc., but perhaps there was enough of a zoom on them that you could do it from a safe distance. I don't really know. I didn't pick up the package. And it was disturbing enough back then. This has totally one-upped the night vision goggles in my mind.
Might as well, because it actually goes to so much greater lengths. I mean, the night vision goggles are kind of like a neat little tool, but the RC car really lets them know, hey, I'm interested in actually doing something with this, because you could probably use it like an RC car, and then record everything you see.
And it would just be rather innocuous, as it would zip through the streets, or, you know, where, what other...
Between... the legs of some skirt-wearing lady, I suppose.
There will be people, rather unscrupulous individuals, who see this as a prime opportunity to get the tool from their arsenal they've been missing, and a wicked game that they wanted anyway. So, I mean, really, Christmas does come early.
And it comes twice.
And it's disturbing. You know what? But hey, there sadly are people in our society... who will have those thoughts. And there will be people who are unscrupulous enough to do it. Is there really a positive thing you can do with an RC surveillance car?
Sweet jumps.
That's what I thought. And record it.
Yeah. That's it. That's what you can possibly do.
I'm sure there are many, many positive things you could do with an RC surveillance car. But let's be realistic, people. Are those really going to happen and come to fruition? No. No, they aren't. Instead, people will, you know, spy on their neighbors, spy on their friends, or just, you know, go zipping around with that thing through some sort of crowded plaza of people. Good heavens. Well, thank you. Thank you, everybody at Call of Duty Black Ops who came up with this.
Treyarch.
Yes, Treyarch, sorry.
The Treyarch team.
The Treyarch team. Now... Infinity Ward, ball's back in your court. What comes next year for next year's Call of Duty edition?
A Rambo knife?
Ooh, but there's got to be some other surveillance creepy aspect to it.
Maybe they're just going to forego that for just for the pure violence, because they actually... Gloves are off.
I have an idea. Just came to me. Rambo knife, but with a very nice spy pen, like, collector set. Which also releases knockout gas.
That combination of devices doesn't make any sense.
Does it make sense for there to be a commercially available RC spy camera packaged with a video game?
As much sense as the night vision goggles, but at least they're just... They're like self-contained units. They're not like a crazy knife and also a pen. It's not like a car and a pair of oven mitts. Like I don't know.
True. You win again. You have such a way of putting things that I had not previously, thought of them. Thank you for setting me back on the straight and narrow.
Unless it was just the spy pen that releases knockout gas, which is also ridiculous enough on its own.
Maybe they want to go for a classier Call of Duty game next time. You know, more fully within the spy espionage genre.
Well, the pen is classy enough.
And it's a nice pen, too.
And it's a
people take you seriously when you have a nice pen.
Yes.
I'm just saying. But somebody in this world who will not have a nice fancy pen like that, but could very well have the RC spy camera to spy on all of his opponents.
Oh, that's a perfect transition, by the way.
Thank you. I practiced it earlier. But his name is Billy Mitchell. Now, do not be afraid. Do not fear. Do not feel bad if that is a name that doesn't exactly conjure any images, if it's a name you're not exactly familiar with.
You'd probably be familiar with it if you saw King of Kong, which I haven't, but I've been told numerous times to see it because it's awesome, apparently.
I too, have heard universally good things about it. I have not had the opportunity to check it out, but this man, Billy Mitchell, he's one of the subjects of that documentary, King of Kong. He has basically made it his life's work to constantly have the high scores in Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong Jr.
Yes.
And over the last few years, he has gone back and forth on the high score crown, high score title of the original arcade machine of Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong Jr. And it was a few weekends ago when he set the record for, or set a new record for both Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong Jr. Now, the thing is, he was in Ottumwa, Iowa, being inducted into the inaugural class, or as a member of the inaugural class of the International Video Game Hall of Fame, as part of their Big Bang celebration, and, he just decided to take the opportunity, try his hand at Donkey Kong to regain the top spot in the world, and he did. He did set a new high mark in Donkey Kong, just over 1.5 million points, and he did it in just under 3 hours. He wasn't done there. After all the hoopla, as he tells of his decision to tackle Donkey Kong Jr., he says, quote, "I remember a lot of celebration, hugs, kisses, and a lot of hooting and hollering. Once that died down, I stood there looking at Donkey Kong Jr. and thought, there's one more thing I have to take care of." And so he did. He set a new mark in Donkey Kong Jr., over 1.2 million points. He did that in just under 4 hours. So the man spent close to 7 hours straight setting new records on arcade machines.
During an induction into the Video Game Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Ceremonies, basically.
Well, what more fitting time? That's not the ridiculous thing.
Yes.
The ridiculous thing is that he has... We're as part of this story, and when asked to comment on his achievements, he provided one of the absolute best quotes I have heard this year. Allow me to read it verbatim, as was printed in the story on Kotaku.com. Not only did Billy Mitchell set a new record, in Donkey Kong, but he quit the Donkey Kong game right after he beat the previous high score. So basically, he crossed that finish line. Instead of going a bit further, he's like, yeah, I'm done. When asked about this, when asked why, Billy Mitchell said, quote, "Some say I'm being cocky. Some say I'm being lazy. I say I'm being Billy Mitchell."
See, Billy Mitchell, from what I've seen and read on the internet, he seems to be a huge dick.
That's what I'm gathering.
there was a video that is on YouTube. You could search it up. I can't remember what it was called for the life of me, but we'll find it and put it on the website this week.
TheArcadeShow.com.
This guy, this cameraman, who's obviously a friend or something of Billy Mitchell's, was supposed to come and interview him or something because he got this new record in Donkey Kong Jr.
Yes. Come and record the celebration.
Yeah, come to record the celebration. So it's like 2, 3 in the morning. You can tell it's like 2, 3 in the morning. It's like super dark.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy comes into like this, you know, dark arcade where there's Billy Mitchell and like two other people. And Billy Mitchell is basically just saying to the guy, "Well, where are you? Everything's died down now. I don't care anymore," kind of thing. And the guy's like, "Well, aren't you going to talk about your achievement?" And he's just kind of saying, "Well, whatever. I don't care. You don't care about me. Whatever." He has like this big jerk demeanor about him. Like, come on, man. You probably phoned him up at like 1:30 in the morning. And this guy was just like, "What? Okay, I guess I'll get down there then." Hopped in his car with a camera and just drove. And
Billy Mitchell was upset that his camera guy friend didn't get there in time, probably because he was sleeping.
Yeah, it's probably because, I don't know, maybe he has a job to go to or something that doesn't involve just beating video game records.
And, you know, I don't know. I wish not to judge people on appearances, but there's just something about Billy Mitchell. When you see a picture of him, you know, or a video of him, he just strikes me as being one of the just biggest, just a BDIU, to borrow an acronym from South Park.
Yes. Oh, yes.
If you don't know BDIU, seriously, Google it. You'll find out in 3 seconds. But he really should be a nominee for that award.
Yes, and I like picturing him winning it in the same fashion that John Edwards won it on South Park.
It would be very fitting. And then he would also be upset that his camera guy friend wasn't there to record that celebration. Because yes, it'd be, you know, 17,000 light years away.
Exactly. But,
so, kudos to Billy Mitchell.
And also not kudos to Billy Mitchell.
Hey, you got your records back, but, dude, you wonder why nobody likes you. And your life is subject to, you know, constantly getting a high score in Donkey Kong or Donkey Kong Jr. Seriously.
He's right, just going to be de-seated from that throne anyways.
It's true.
Records. I can see the guy that actually initially took his record away from him, Hank Chien, probably just going back and doing it again and probably destroying him. Probably just going way further beyond the record that
Billy Mitchell could have had he not just walked away right after crossing the finish line.
Yes. That's what I'd do if I was him, because if I had the ability to do that, you know, you might as well just completely go for the gusto and
set some mark that is just wholly unattainable.
Yes.
Instead, and, no, you're just basically saying, "Hey, rest of the world, yeah, you can beat it, but you know what? Whatever you get, I'll just beat it again. Why? I'm Billy Mitchell."
Well, okay, really, there,
friend?
Really? But
good for you. But
yes,
we move along now to the other real news of the week and into the good news. The news that you want to hear about because, well, if you're aware, you don't really like Billy Mitchell, and that's fine. We dig that. We respect that. But something you can dig, something you can get behind, Portal 2.
Yes, Portal 2 has a release date now, and another very interesting tidbit.
Indeed, a very interesting little tidbit. Gamescom is, I guess, the German equivalent of E3 going on in Germany, obviously, this week, and some news tidbits, news items coming from that. But, of course, the first one we're talking about, the fact that Portal 2 was announced to have a solid release date, which is a very good thing because, well, it was pushed back after initially being slated to come out this holiday season. Back in June, it was then said, well, it's going to come out sometime in 2011. Many people worried. Many people didn't like that because nobody really knew what time in 2011 it's coming out. Fear not, because it's only been pushed back by about really a month to, you know, maybe 2 months. Because mark it on your calendars, write it down, get it tattooed on your forearm.
Or forehead.
Ooh, that works too. February 9th, 2011. Now, it wasn't clearly indicated if that's the European release date or the North American release date, but...
Or both.
Or both.
Who knows?
Could release simultaneously, but if it is just... that date is just for Europe alone, then the North American release is about a few days later.
Usually.
So there you go. Sometime around February 9th, or exactly on February 9th, is when you can be able to get your hands on Portal 2 on your Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, and PC. But the other tidbit you were talking about...
Yes, there's a very interesting little friend character in the game whose name is Buddy Sphere... Because I guess he's a buddy sphere, much like there is your weighted companion cube in the first game. You get a buddy sphere in the second game, it seems.
Yes, buddy sphere, or, given a very British name, Wheatley. But I guess, you know, he really is your buddy sphere anyway, but ignore that stuffy British name.
Yes, but also, zone back into the stuffy British name, because he's being voiced by a Brit... Not a very stuffy Brit, though.
No, very, very loose, very, very funny Brit.
Yes, Stephen Merchant is going to be the voice of Wheatley, your buddy Sphere.
Stephen Merchant, apparently, I've heard that name before. Where is he from again?
You know, co-writer of the original British Office with Ricky Gervais, and also co-star of Extras, you know, Ricky Gervais' other show. If you haven't seen it, you are missing a lot. Like, a lot. It's a hilarious show that lasted for 2 seasons a few years ago, and they actually recently had a marathon of it on television, which I watched again, because I love that show.
Oh, I thought you meant you watch television again now. That's what it sounded like. Well, but hey, if it's on, then you have a reason to.
I watched Extras again,
yes.
Is what I meant to say.
Thank you.
And The Office the day before.
Fair enough. But so you had a double dose, like 2 days worth of Stephen Merchant.
Yes, and Ricky Gervais. But Stephen Merchant as well.
But for the purposes of this, yes, Stephen Merchant.
Yes, you'll know who he is if you've seen Extras. He's the, 7 foot tall guy with glasses. Acts like a complete idiot on Extras, but isn't actually a complete idiot. He's actually super intelligent in real life. But yes, he's the voice of Buddy Sphere. Adding humor and Stephen Merchant to Portal 2.
Anything with Stephen Merchant is A-OK in my books.
Mine as well.
And pretty much what this world needs more of is more Stephen Merchant. And correspondingly, more Ricky Gervais, because they are a tag team. They're an inseparable tag team, as the, Legion of Doom was back in the day. They're yes. the comedic version of the Legion of Doom.
Or the Bushwhackers.
Ooh, the Bushwhackers as well, indeed. But, and you know what? With the, addition of Stephen Merchant to Portal 2, this game just has so much more nerd cred now. It had an insane amount of nerd cred before, but now it's in the untouchable sphere of nerd cred.
It sure is.
So just giving people that much more reason to look forward to it when it comes out. Again, February 9th of next year, February 9th, 2011. Do mark that on your calendars because, you're going to regret it if you do not.
But maybe you won't.
That's
true. You're a big monster.
Ooh.
I'm calling you out.
Those are some strong words.
Yes.
If not fighting words.
Yes, them's is fighting words. So, take from that what you will. Maybe we'll just move along to the next story now.
Thank you.
Yes.
That'd be nice, since you left me with nowhere to go from there. Well, now that Dennis has called out, a great portion of our listenership, and perhaps challenged them to a rousing game of fisticuffs.
No, just an arm wrestle.
Oh!
I don't want to go overboard here. I have to protect the face, I need that for, smiling and stuff.
Touché! That's the only thing you would possibly be concerned of, is no longer being able to smile.
Yes. It's a very important thing to be able to do in life.
Okay. Well, I'm going to move along now, because also, this past week, Nintendo didn't really have a showing at Gamescom, per se, but they tried to steal some of the glory, some of the sunshine for themselves, by announcing release dates for some of the bigger titles that they announced back at E3. And these are games that were just announced back at E3 and were not even previously known to be in development. Of course, the big three of them being Kirby's Epic Yarn, Donkey Kong Country Returns, and, of course, the new GoldenEye 007. So the first one of this holy trinity, this trifecta, if you will, comes on October 17th, and that's when you can get Kirby's Epic Yarn, which, in my opinion, the most appealing of all three, simply because of the over-the-top, ridiculously fresh visual style and graphics.
Yes, the made of yarn art style, which is something I don't think we've ever seen before.
Yarn, felt, an arts and crafts, you know, aesthetic to a video game.
Yes.
Where Kirby is just an outline of pink string.
Yes, I like it.
Holy hell. Fantastic. But
yes.
After that, coming out in the next month, November 21st, is when people will be able to get their hands on Donkey Kong Country Returns. The
yes.
Return to the 2D platforming, I guess, days of the Super Nintendo, this time handled by Retro Studios, the guys who previously worked on the Metroid Prime series.
Yes.
So, and if you recall from E3, well, a very, very interesting looking game. I personally like it.
Yes. Well, I'm reserving judgment. It didn't... I go way back with Donkey Kong Country. I remember saving up for quite a long time when I was, well, 11, 12 years old for the first one, and buying it with all of my birthday and part of my Christmas money, which I'm sure some of you might be able to relate to. I don't know. Perhaps.
Unless you're one of those people who just got absolutely everything.
Yeah, one of those crazy kids who most people hated.
Must be
myself,
nice.
Myself included. I hate you. I'm just kidding. I did then. I don't now. I don't care now. I have enough money for things like this now. But back then, it was a very big deal. So, I just keep digging myself a hole. Yes, as Mike the Legend keeps motioning. But yes, what I meant to say was that instead of going off on a tangent calling a bunch of people out, yes, Mike the Legend keeps motioning that I'm digging a hole, even bigger hole, and that I might be backpedaling now. Yes, Donkey Kong Country had a very unique style, to me anyways, and I still like the style, and a lot of the things about the style that I liked were missing from this new game from what I saw in the trailer. But I'll still reserve judgment until playing it.
Fair enough. Well, you know what? It's at least nice to see the character of Donkey Kong back to, I guess, a field where he, I guess,
belongs?
Fits better and properly belongs, as opposed to what we saw with Donkey Kong 64 and the Donkey Kong Barrel Blast games. And
Bongo Blast, I think they were called.
Bongo Blast? Ah, yes, yes.
Or Bongo, whatever they were called. The games where you control them.
Donkey was
Jungle Fever? Jungle Beat Fever?
Jungle
something?
Beat, yes.
Jungle Beat?
Or Donkey Konga.
Yes. Those. We worked it out. We figured out what it's called.
Yes.
Donkey Konga. The ones where you bang the like bongos and talk into that microphone.
Yeah, Donkey Kong really has no place being in a rhythm game. I'm
yes,
sorry.
That game sucked. I played it. It sucked. Straight up. Sucked.
Right. Well, if you want to wash out that taste of Donkey Konga, November 21st is when you will be able to do that, but 5 days before that, Nintendo will actually have an action game, a shooting game, that people might be interested in.
Yes.
Because November 16th, that is the day when people will be able to get their hands on the remake of GoldenEye 007. Gone is Pierce Brosnan, in is Daniel Craig, and with a whole lot of upgraded visuals.
That's going to be weird playing that, with upgraded visuals and with not Pierce Brosnan. I mean, GoldenEye is like a classic game to us anyway, to our generation. GoldenEye
is
a classic game that's been out for forever now, basically, and Pierce Brosnan was like James Bond in that game.
It's going to be weird as well, too, because GoldenEye is really what helped to popularize and bring into the mainstream the genre of first-person shooters.
Yes.
It made it more acceptable and brought it to a wider audience. But that genre has just gone, advanced by leaps and bounds. And I don't know how I'm going to feel about playing a remake of, that kind of game.
Yeah, I know.
There's going to be a lot of mixed things going on, but hopefully the game can stand on its own. I'm certainly going to give it a shot and, see what the deathmatch is like.
Yes. The part I used to hate the most, because I would always get caught playing with people who were far better at the game than I was, because I never had the game, and they always did. So you see how that went.
So they knew all the spots on the maps to hide out and just wait for you.
Yes, and place proximity bombs everywhere and just destroy me. Thanks, guys. You're the best. I love this game. That's what I said back then. I'm all sunshine and rainbows today.
Wow, you're just not bitter at all today.
Yes, I guess I'm not.
That's what I thought. But hopefully, those dates, again, October 17 for Kirby's Epic Yarn, November 16 for GoldenEye 007, November 21 for the new Donkey Kong Country Returns, all on your Wii.
Yes.
So perhaps reason to actually buy games for your Wii instead of just buying it to get an extra remote. I'm just saying.
Yes.
But, with the release dates being released and in great quantity over the past couple days, for, this year, for this holiday season, and even into next year, in the case of Portal 2, we have a game that we can look forward to.
Yes, in 2012, in the supposed year of our destruction.
2012, I guess, perhaps this is what will bring about our destruction. There was a new game announced and, I guess unveiled is a better term this week, from the people who worked on Bioshock 2. It was rumored that they had a new game in development. It was actually announced as it was, as to what it was a couple days ago. And it's Bioshock Infinite.
Yes.
What is Bioshock Infinite, you ask? Well, it's a game that will bear the franchise's name, but it's not really connected to the story of Bioshock 1 or 2. It's kind of like a Bioshock offshoot.
Yes, it's very, very bizarre looking, actually. It's steampunk. If you know what steampunk is, I don't really want to have to go into a big explanation of this right now, but basically when you mix steam engines with things like airships and stuff. Basically, think Final Fantasy XII. That's a perfect example of a steampunk game.
That works just as well. But from what we know, there was just a 2-minute teaser trailer, or I guess debut trailer, launched along with it. It looks like an absolutely amazing game, and we're 2 years away from its release.
Yes, though it's obviously not gameplay footage, it's just kind of more like a concept animation. But the concept animation is great.
And it just gives that certain sense of, this game's going to be insane.
Yes.
What we know of the game is that it's going to take place in an alternate early 20th century. So early 1900s, but an alternate early 1900s. In the city of Columbia, which is an American city, but it's a floating city.
Yes.
And it was apparently made, as the story here from GameSpot.com says, made by the U.S. as a demonstration of the nation's technological know-how and to showcase democracy as it circles the globe. However, as was the case with Rapture in the first two Bioshock games, the utopian ideals gave way to chaos and madness amongst the populace, a situation complicated by the fact that Colombia is bristling with heavy weaponry. So pretty much heavily armored, hot air balloons, if you will.
Yes.
There you go. Now, who are you playing this game? Your character is a guy by the name of Booker DeWitt, who is a former member of the once-feared Pinkerton National Detective Agency, which was supposedly the largest American security company in the late 19th century. So, according to the preview that was shown for this game, he will enter where steampunk robots have replaced horses and people, and crazed citizens foment revolution with strange powers and lots of guns.
Yes, so it should be very interesting.
Again, best we can say is take a look at the debut trailer, because it does give you an idea, and I'm really intrigued by this.
Yes, myself as well.
But if you're wanting to mark a calendar for 2012 and leave a note for yourself, sometime in 2012, as we know, is all we know for a release date, but it will supposedly be coming out on your Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, and PC systems.
Yes.
So here you go, something to look forward to. A new Bioshock game, but it's not quite a new Bioshock game, but yet it still is.
And that's all we can really say about it.
Exactly. And that's that. The more you know.
Yes. But moving along to something else we can't possibly translate or transcribe a nice transition. That's the word I'm looking for.
Okay.
Transition. Brain's a little bit fried today. Sorry, people.
That's all right. Fully understandable. It's, you know, late in the week. You're tired. You've had a long day. You know, long week of whatever it is that you do.
Yes, whatever it is that I do. Sure. We'll go for that. It's Friday. I have an excuse to be drunk in the middle of the week. I'm not drunk right now. Just putting that out there.
It's Friday.
Oh, yeah, even though we record on Thursday.
Nevertheless.
Yeah, something we can't transition to.
Yes, well, but it was announced this week during Gamescom as well. A new peripheral that was announced and unveiled by THQ for use with your Wii.
Yes.
But it's not, you know, it's not like a, you know, another set of plastic sports equipment.
Or like fake drumsticks or something.
It's nothing music related. It's nothing sports related. But it's very much art related.
Yes, it's a very brand new original peripheral made by THQ. Which looks like it could be a Nintendo peripheral. But it's not.
It certainly looks like it could be a Nintendo peripheral. And when I first saw the images of it, the screenshots of it, if you will, my first thought was, oh, okay, Nintendo is coming out with a new Mario Paint.
Yes, but that's not the case.
No, that's not the case, because it's being done by THQ. Oh, and if you haven't figured it out, it's a tablet.
Yes, it's a much like a Wacom tablet, or whatever kind of tablet you want to call it.
Mm-hmm. A drawing tablet, if you will, that yes. You would use with your computer, your PC, or Mac system for graphic design purposes.
Yes, but it's not for your PC. It has a slot for your Wii remote on the left-hand side of it, where, you know, it just looks like it clicks in, and then it comes bundled, apparently, with this thing called UDraw Studio, because this tablet's called the UDraw Game Tablet, which apparently will sell for $70, which seems like a pretty good price point for a tablet.
Certainly does, and especially in the grand scheme of things in terms of, you know, peripherals and accessories for your systems, there's actually something to this rather than just, you know, casings for your Wii remote.
Yes, this tablet, which comes packaged with this UDraw Studio, apparently it's a full 9x7-inch pad with a slot for a Wii remote, like I just said, and on the pad is a smaller blue border drawing area, which is 6x4 inches, as well as a tethered stylus with two buttons and a pressure-sensitive nib on it to allow you for pen stroke thickness. Like, you press harder, the pen gets thicker, you press lighter, the pen gets thinner, kind of much like a real tablet, if you've ever used one.
This is true. But the interesting thing is, not only, you know, you're probably thinking, okay, well, you know what, Mario Paint, I can just paint on my Wii and that's it. The fun stops there. Not so fast there, friendo, because the interesting thing about this is that apparently your finished works of art can be exported onto an SD card, and then you can take them and use them in other devices.
Yes, which is at least fair and interesting. I mean, it's good that they're actually acknowledging that there's a world outside of a video game, and that you might want to like share a original piece of art with people who might not have the video game,
or perhaps export your piece of art and then work on it more on your PC.
Yeah, with more legitimate software, perhaps.
And, you know, more diverse tools.
Yes. But it's not just a drawing tablet for your Wii. They're actually making games for it.
Which is bizarre. And, you know, you will have, you know, your art studio game that comes with it. But THQ also announced that releasing alongside the game tablet will be Pictionary.
Which is the perfect use for it, I think.
I cannot think of a more perfect title other than Pictionary for this title, or for this device, but they're also releasing something called Dude's Big Adventure, which I'm assuming is, you know, a short for Doodle.
Probably, yes. Since it's D-O-O-D as opposed to D-U-D-E. That might not have been clear since we're reading to you on the radio. Since you're not reading alongside us. But we'll move along here.
Quite indeed. But Dude's Big Adventure is, well, it's going to be a legitimate fleshed out game because it's going to be a side-scrolling 2.5D platformer. And I guess its unique selling point is that by using the tablet, by drawing on this game tablet, you can change the skin of the hero in the game.
You can draw on his skin, tattoo him up, I guess, as it were.
And give him different powers and abilities, presumably.
Probably. I mean, we don't know that for sure, but what else could you possibly achieve by just drawing on him otherwise?
I really am not too sure, which is a very peculiar take on, I guess, interacting with your video game and your hero, but bizarre indeed, all the same. But if you're interested in this You Draw game tablet, it's going to be coming out this holiday season, so you'll be able to get it in time for Christmas for yourself if you're interested, or perhaps for a younger sibling, a young child, if you will. $70 is the price point, and the other games, as we said, Pictionary and Dude's Big Adventure, they will sell for about $30 each. And THQ apparently is intending to roll out more You Draw compatible packages and games about every 3 months or so.
Yeah, so they're really serious about this.
They think they've got something with this, and they're not necessarily wrong.
No, I mean, it's been a while since there's been, something like Mario Paint, so I'm all for this.
Certainly, and you know what? I mean, when you see it, you will instantly think, Mario Paint. New Mario Paint.
Here's hoping that there's a THQ Nintendo collaboration on that.
You know what? We've seen Nintendo engage in some collaborations that we would have never previously seen, especially, look, Metroid Other M.
Yes.
I think at this point, anything's possible.
It's true.
But THQ, there you go. You draw game tablets, so rock on. But we have time for one last story here, if you will, and it's, finally there's a champion in the world of a video game that's, has not had an official world champion before.
And it's kind of weird that there hasn't been one since this game has been around. It's a staple of gaming, and it has been for, 30 years or so?
Going on 30 years, but Tetris finally now has an official world champion, because earlier this month in Los Angeles, there was a tournament, a challenge, if you will. There was the first ever Classic Tetris World Championship, which, okay, why not? Over 200 people showed up to test their Tetris skills against one another to see who could reign supreme, as the event was organized by former Nintendo World Champion and Tetris expert Robin Mihara, and was sponsored by the licensing company for Tetris, Blue Planet Software. And yes, to answer your question, the creator of Tetris, Mr. Pajnatov himself, he was on hand to take in the action, as the 200-plus players got whittled down to a total of 8 in the semifinals. And when all was said and done, 29-year-old Jonas Neubauer of Redondo Beach, California, walked away with the title of Tetris World Champion. Sorry, Classic Tetris World Champion.
Yeah, we should probably clarify here that the version of Tetris that they were playing on was the original NES version of the game.
Yes.
So,
as Tetris has pretty much been on every possible system, every possible device, in many different iterations on the web.
And not Tengen Tetris.
That's true,
but
too.
The officially licensed Nintendo Tetris.
Which would have been funny if they used the Tengen one.
Yes. Yes, it would have been. Especially if Mr. Pajnatov was there, looking around wide-eyed in awe that they would do such a great disservice to him by bringing him down and slapping him in the face with this with this mess that he basically got completely hosed over on back in the day. It's a very interesting story. You should look it up someday.
It's true.
Just a side note.
Another day. When you have time and when you're not busy listening to us as we regale you with tales of Jonas Neubauer, who is, in fact, your new official classic Tetris world champion, as I said, from Redondo Beach, California. He made it to the finals and competed against Harry Hong, who is a 25-year-old logistics specialist from Los Angeles, and Mr. Neubauer, for his efforts, for his skill, and his ability to do without getting that single, you know, single line piece that everyone always needs.
Yes.
He walked away with a giant trophy and a grand prize of $1,000 cash.
Yes, so congratulations, Jonas, or Jonas, however you want to pronounce it.
I'm going with Jonas.
I'll go with Jonas, you know, just to keep the diversity there.
I despise you now. But congratulations to him. No word if this is going to be a now annual tournament, which could see a new world champion every year.
It sounds awesome. Like, when I'm reading the description here, and I'm sure when you were probably listening to the description via us on the radio, or by the internet at thearcadeshow.com or kick.fm.
Yes, indeed.
I kept thinking of the wizard. Like, you know how it was like a big crazy scramble for, like, you know, kids scoring points on, like, random game consoles, defeating other kids and getting, you know, whittled down to, like, the top 8, then top 4, then top 2.
Yes.
And then the champion.
Well, it's been a while since there's been a big, ridiculous tournament, so perhaps this is working to bring that back. And why not? What better game than Tetris? Everybody knows Tetris.
It's true.
Everybody's played Tetris.
Everyone has their own strategy for playing Tetris. Sometimes it works better than other people's strategies. Other times it completely backfires in your face. Especially when you don't get that long block that you so desperately need to keep getting your Tetrises.
But, you know, when it finally does come, or you see it queued up as the next piece, but you've already, you know,
you've already
lost.
Blocked off that part where you were going to use it because you got that L-shaped block, which is just good enough. But no!
But not quite.
Not quite.
But, yes, congratulations. Our kudos do go to Jonas Neubauer. And for all you listeners out there who are probably thinking, hey, I could do that. I'm wicked awesome at Tetris. Or I know someone who's wicked awesome at Tetris. They could do that. Once we hear more information about if this is going to be an annual tournament, we will certainly pass that along. But it's in California, so you have to make your own way there.
Yes. We could have a convoy, because I wouldn't mind going down to at least check it out.
A great big convoy?
Yes.
Ooh.
Going across the land.
I like it. Certainly, we will keep you apprised of information on that regard. But more information that we always like to keep you apprised of comes at this time in the form of our blast from the past.
Yes, which signals that we're almost out of time, but this week's blast from the past, not blast of the past, but blast from the past, is a game I'm sure we've probably had about 10 times on this show, but I don't care because I'm currently playing through it a bunch of times right now because it was re-released on the DS 2 years ago, and it's a very, very good version on the DS. I mean, remakes or re-editions or whatever sometimes get my ire when they're done poorly, but this one wasn't done poorly, and it just so happens that my Super Nintendo version of the game, the battery backup is failing, so
oh.
This works out perfectly. What game am I talking about? Chrono Trigger.
Ah, Chrono Trigger.
The classic RPG based around time travel and saving the world.
As is the basis for most RPGs.
Yes, but this one has a heavy slant on time travel in a bunch of different ridiculously disparate time periods with wildly different characters. And, yeah, it's the character designs are by Akira Toriyama, who of Dragon Ball Z fame, etc., etc.
Which is why, might explain why the main character of Chrono, his hair is as obscenely large as it is.
Yes, and he looks kind of like Goku, and, you know, a couple of the other characters look like other Dragon Ball Z characters, but that's neither here nor there. That's just his art style, but it's still awesome.
A very eclectic cast of characters in the game as well.
Yes, but if you haven't played it, you should be able to find it relatively easily right now for the DS. It's Chrono Trigger. It's relatively inexpensive right now, too. Last time I saw it was probably about $25, so
it's a worthwhile investment, too.
It's good.
You get not just the core game of Chrono Trigger, but you get some new endings to try and achieve as well.
Yes, two new endings and a bunch of new areas as well, which I've already kind of blown through and explored them all. But that's just because I played the game a lot. But hey, it's a great game. I can't say enough about it.
Chrono Trigger. go check it out. A fine selection indeed, and I think this officially counts as the sixth time in the 4.5 year history of this program when it's been used as a blast from the past.
Well,
not quite 10 yet, but, you know, we've still got a ways to go here.
Yes.
But that about wraps us up for this week, as we are here every Friday night at 7 p.m., and we air once again Sundays at 6 p.m., as we like to bookend your weekend. You know, end you on a good note when you're about to go out and relax and enjoy the weekend, and, you know, put a smile on your face when you're about to go back to the drudgery of work on Monday.
Yes.
Or perhaps you don't work Monday because you make the schedule and you gave yourself that day off. I'm just saying. But we are here every Friday night at 7, Sunday at 6, as I said, and say again, well, because I can. And also, you can always reach us through the power of email, thearcade@kick.fm, or, as we mentioned again, as we've said many times throughout the show, our email or our website is thearcadeshow.com. But until next week, good night, everybody.
Good night.